An unsavory Pennsylvania party boss, whom Lincoln made Secretary of War as political payoff for his support during the campaign, Simon Cameron quickly discovered that running a department ramping up for a protracted conflict was too much for him. Disorganized and bewildered, he soon found his desk piled high with documents, as well as charges of maladministration and contracting fraud. Baker's first job for Cameron came in August. The former vigilante turned out to be a better detective than spy. Sporting a slouch hat, linen duster, gray pantaloons, and two pistols, Baker took the train to Baltimore posing as a Confederate arms dealer and using his old cover name, Sam Munson, to catch two brothers suspected of smuggling critical northern goods, such as small arms and ammunition, to the Confederacy. Baker convinced the brothers he was a secret rebel buyer with cash to purchase northern goods. One of the brothers took him to Philadelphia to shop for the weapons. With the help of several canvas bags filled with fake gold coins and Philadelphia's police chief, his name of all things was Benjamin Franklin, and he hid under a bed in Baker's room at the American House so he could listen in on the transaction. Baker set up an elaborate sting to capture the smugglers and break up their ring. The case brought him his first media attention. Franklin leaked the story of the sting to a New York newspaper, which hailed the police chief and an unnamed, celebrated Lincoln detective, a daring Californian full of nerve, who pulled off the operation. Elizabeth Van Loo watched largely in silence as Richmonders rejoiced over news of Beauregard's victory at Manassas Junction. Davis gave a glowing account of the battle to a large audience standing outside the Spotswood Hotel. Union handcuffs scavenged from the battlefield were exhibited in the hotel lobby, said to be intended for Davis and his officers. City residents and Southerners elsewhere were convinced that Northern leaders would wear the shackles. The Battle of Manassas would break the Union's backbone, and the war would be over by autumn's frost. The city's exuberance was soon doused by the arrival in waves of Confederate casualties. First came the walking wounded, stumbling in as heavy rain drenched the city. Trains chugging into Richmond's rail station at 8th and Broad Streets carried the coffins of the second wave. Carriages took the ones bearing officers to the Capitol, a band following playing Handel's dreary Dead March from the oratorio Saul. The third wave soon followed, ambulance trains carrying the seriously wounded on stretchers. Van Loo and others stood at a mass meeting in Richmond's Capitol Square after the battle, as the mayor made arrangements for buildings to house the wounded and gave citizens their assignments to care for the men. The city was woefully unprepared for the influx of casualties. Richmond also was not ready for Manassas's more than 1,000 Union prisoners of war who poured in with the casualties. Government officials scrambled to set up camps and find empty buildings to house the captives. Van Loo quickly showed empathy for these poor inmates. The Richmond Inquirer disapprovingly noted her assiduous attentions to the Yankee prisoners and editorialized that the POWs were being treated better than they deserve and have any right to expect.